Radha Radha Damodar Ki Jai Kirti Brata Ki Jai Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Radhakala Chanji Ki Jai Mother Yashoda Ki Jai Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jala Balaba Girivara Dhari Gopi Jala Balaba Girivara Dhari Gopi Jala Balaba Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Vajjana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vajjana Ranjana Nandana Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Nandana Vrajajana Ranjamuna Kira Banachari Jamuna Kira Jamuna Kira Manachari Jamuna Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Oh Madhava Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Jana Vallabha Girivara Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Anandana Vraja Jana Jamuna Ira Vanachari Ira Jamuna Ira Vanachari Vihari Radha Madhava Jaya Radha श्री राधा माधव की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय, शिव प्रभुपाद की जय, जय गौ प्रेमानंद जी, हरि हरि बोल। भगवान विष्णु बताए कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनी थी नमने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवारि पश्चात्य रसतरिणे ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय A reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 18, text 29. Buddha Balaka Vat Kridat Kushala Jada Vach Charet Bhaded Unmata Vad Vidvan Gochayan Nagamash Charet Buddha Balaka Vat Kridet Balaka Vat Kushala Jharavat Charet Vadar Ummatavat Vidvan Gocharyam Nagamas Chayet Buddha Balakavat Kridet Buddha Balakayat Kridet Kushala Jharavat Charet Vadet Ummatavat Vidvan Gucharyam Nagamas Chayet Buddha Bhalaka Vat Kridet Kushala Janavat Charet Vadet Ummatavat Vidvan Ummatavat Gocharyam Nagamas Chayet Dho Bhalaka Vyat Kriyat Kushala Jharavat Charet Buddha Balakaya Kridat Uchala Jharavat Charet Badar Unmatavad Vidvan Kochayam Nagamas Charet Buddha Balaka Vyat Kridat Jagamas Kridat Kridan Word meanings Buddha intelligent. Excuse me. Although intelligent. Balakavat. Like a child. Oblivious to honor and dishonor. Kridat. He should enjoy life. Kushalaha. Although expert. Jadavat. Like a stunned person. Charet. He should act. Vadet. He should speak. Unmatavat. Like an insane person. Vidvan. Although most learned. Gocharam chayam. Unrestricted behavior. Nagamaha. Although expert in Vedic injunctions. Charet. He should perform. Who wants to guess what the verse means? Avadut? Why would you act like an insane person if you're most learned? We shall find out in today's class. Why would you act like a balakavat, like a child, although you're brilliant? You act like a child. You speak like you're crazy. And you have no restriction on your behavior. Why would you do that? Although most wise, the Paramahansa should enjoy life like a child, oblivious to honor and dishonor. Although most expert, he should behave like a stunted, incompetent person. Although most learned, he should speak like an insane person. And although a scholar learned in Vedic regulations, he should behave in an unrestricted manner. You like that verse? Everyone's thinking, I can't wait to become a Paramahansa. Then I don't have to follow any rules. I can talk like I'm crazy. I don't have to care about anything. I'll read that again. Why don't we repeat? Although most wise, the Paramahansa should enjoy life like a child. Oblivious to honor and dishonor. Although most expert, he should behave like a stunted, incompetent person. Although most learned, he should speak like an insane person. And although a learned scholar, although a scholar learned in Vedic regulations, he should behave in an unrestricted manner. So he shouldn't care about anything. He should be incompetent, speak like he's crazy, and not follow any rules. Yeah. Purport. A Paramahansa sannyasi, fearing that his mind may be deviated by the tremendous prestige that people sometimes offer to a perfectly self-realized person, conceals his position as described in this verse. Bhamsi Das Babaji, who I think was contemporary of Gaurakishore Das Babaji, or maybe contemporary of at that time, Bhakti Siddhanta also. And he used to smoke a hookah pipe. And you think, that's weird. What does he have to do with a hookah pipe? And so some people say he did that so people would just think he's an ordinary person and not bother him. Because a lot of these Babaji's would get bothered, so they'd have to hide or do something. I was hearing that people used to steal Gaurakishore Das Babaji's beads. They wanted to get that shakti from his. They wanted to get the shakti from his beads. So then he just made some string or something, made some beads, so nobody would take. But anyway, sometimes they will act as ordinary people because they find it an impediment to be surrounded by ordinary people honoring them, and they'd rather just do their bhajan peacefully without having to be honored. A self-realized person does not try to please the mass of people, nor does he desire social prestige, since the mission of his life is to remain detached. Excuse me. From the material world, and to always please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada said, wherever you go, your mind will go. I thought when I came to Dallas, my allergy would be gone. But somehow or other, because when I lived here, I only would get allergies in March, in April. In the fall, I wouldn't. So now my allergy is following me, just like my mind has followed me from Alachua to Dallas. Even if you go to Vrindavan, you still bring your mind with you. It may be a little more inspiring, but you still have your mind. A self-realized person does not try to please the mass of people, nor does he desire social prestige, since the mission of his life is to remain detached from the material world and to always please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although neglecting ordinary rules and regulations, a paramahansa does not ever become sinful or immoral, but rather neglects ritualistic aspects of religious custom, such as dressing in a particular way, performing certain ceremonies, or executing specific penances and austerities. There's a verse, I think, of Narada Muni spoke. He said, if you are Krishna conscious, why would you do austerity? Because you've reached the goal. If you're not Krishna conscious, what's the point of austerity? It's just like, it doesn't help. If your goal is not to be Krishna conscious, what's the point of doing austerity? And if you're Krishna conscious, what's the point of doing austerity? You already achieved the goal. So, when Prabhupada talks about austerity, he's talking about these types of things, of severe fasting, taking vratas, not to speak, bathing in the winter in a lake, summer, and surround yourself with fire in the summer, these kinds of things. It's like, what's the point? You could take prasadam and make more advancement, even though that doesn't seem like an austerity. Although, if you've been a devotee a long time, you realize to only take prasadam is an austerity, because there are other options available. So that's part of what's being described here. Maybe traditionally the sadhus or aesthetics would do some kind of austerity, but paramhansa, it's different. His life is different now. It's not his focus. Ritual, especially in South India, it's very ritually infused worship of Krishna. And one of the things I'd noticed that people who become devotees, especially from South India, they have that samskara of giving importance to ritual, which is a good samskara, but it works against them when they chant japa, because then japa becomes a ritual. So if something's a ritual, then the mechanical execution of the process is the perfection of it, not the consciousness. That's the difference. You do the ritual, throw the grains up here, do the ghee like this, chant the mantra perfectly, and then it was a success. consciousness, that's not what's it's not taken into consideration. The external is taken into consideration. And you can also see that in a materialistic culture, everyone's looking at externals to evaluate you. What's that label on your shirt? And how much money do you have? And what car do you drive? And you may be this fantastic, amazing person, but it's hard for people to appreciate you if you drive to work in a 1977 Toyota Corolla and a shirt that's out of style, isn't it? So it's that same ritualistic consciousness pervades a materialistic culture because we don't always value consciousness, like dedication, devotion. So Martin Luther King said, if your occupation is a street sweeper, that's by, you know, he didn't say karmically, but basically he meant that. If by divine arrangement you're meant to be a street sweeper, then you should do that in the consciousness that Michelangelo had when he was painting. He said, paint it with the same dedication. He said, sweep the street with the same dedication Michelangelo had when he painted, and sweep the street with the same dedication that Shakespeare had when he wrote. And he said, if you do that, all the hosts of gods will come and declare, here lives a great street sweeper. So we have Varnashram, and so in Varnashram, you can be a street sweeper, and you could be a banker, and you could be a flute player, and it's like that's your varna, but your consciousness is what's important. In our culture, consciousness is pretty low everywhere across the board. So then it's based on what you can produce externally. So when we come to Krishna consciousness with that mentality, then we look at it all and think, okay, it's 16 rounds at 4 in the morning. You look at all the externals and you think, okay, I'll just do it, right? I'll get it down, you know. Okay, how do you do it? Well, you sit straight, you pronounce Hare Krishna, Hare, you hear. Maybe I'll put my ear out, you know, and I'll hear. Maybe put a blanket over my head. And, you know, I used to do yoga, so I know how to sit, and I'll add some pranayama, and I'll be, you know, within a few weeks, I'll be there, self-realized. And it's not what it's all about. That may help, the externals may help. But when we think of it in a ritualistic way, then we give importance to ritual. Yes? And consciousness, O Krishna, I want to love you and serve you, that may not arise or awaken in consciousness and just doing service. So that's the problem not only Indians have, but materialistic culture has. If I distribute more books than you, I'll probably get back to Godhead before you, right? Yeah, not according to my poem. They may not let me in. You know, they have a security gate at the entrance to Braj, you know, so if you have material desires, the red light goes off and they're like, sorry. You got to take another berth and, you know, get your act together. You don't have the right consciousness, we can't let you in here. Okay, you've done all these wonderful things, but to join that party, you have to, you know, you can't imitate Krishna. Yeah, you have to have the right consciousness. So, and one of the things that I've seen, when these ritualistic samskaras go very deep, it's hard to give up. It's really difficult to give it, to understand that consciousness with which you do something is more important than the externals. For many people, it's like they've been programmed ritualistically for so long, it's hard for them to make that switch. It takes a while. They make it, but there's resistance to it because it's not the way they were trained to see the world. So they're trained to see things like, okay, what direction do you sit when you chant japa? Should I face east? Is that, you know, it's good, but that's how they're trained. Is it okay to stand? Should I sit? You know, I should sit on a mat, right? Because I shouldn't sit on, you know, everything. So these are all things which are helpful, and but then they become all important. The ritual becomes more the essence. So I've seen it time and time again. So I actually, when I teach them japa, part of the japa course is to deprogram the ritualistic samskaras, because it definitely gets in the way. And I'll get so many questions like that. Well, you know, I go to bed late because I work late, and, you know, I can't start chanting till 6:30. Is that okay? Or, you know, can I not chant? Is that too late? You know, this, it's like, I mean, should I just sleep 3 hours and get up at 4 o'clock? Is that the only time that it's allowed? Because I know that's Brahmamurti, you know. So it's good that they think that way, but it overtakes them. And we're probably, you know, we have the same samskaras, but they're not spiritual. They're totally immaterial, you know. So for us, it's all about looking good, you know. As long as I look like a devotee, and I can get everyone to believe I'm a devotee, then I'm okay. Hare Krishna, you know. I mean, as long as it looks like I'm chanting 16 rounds, even though, you know, I'm flying all over the universe while I'm chanting, as long as everyone else, no one knows what I'm thinking, but my body's in the room and I'm chanting, so I'm doing good, you know. Isn't it? Something like that. You know? So that's our samskara, you know, unfortunately. The pure devotees of the Lord who have dedicated their lives to propagating the Lord's holy name must very expertly present Krishna consciousness in a way pleasing to the mass of people, so that they will accept it. Those who are preaching should try to make Lord Krishna popular without trying to advance their personal prestige in the name of missionary progress. The Paramahansa not engaged in distributing Krishna consciousness, however, should have no attachment whatsoever to public opinion. So, there's a verse, you know, Naradiya Purana. It has the Harinam, Harinam, Harinam verse, Eva Kevalam. But it also has other interesting verses. It has this one amazing verse, which I find so interesting. And you will find it also interesting. It said that a person who has given up this world, who's renounced everything, you know, given up family, given up sense gratification, an ascetic that is completely renounced cannot give up the desire to be honored for his renunciation. He becomes proud of his renunciation. So pride is so subtle. You give up everything and then you become proud that you gave up everything. Isn't that amazing? How subtle it is? And so it is the, you know, we didn't come into the material world to become humble. Did we? No. We came to imitate Krishna. So that's kind of like the pretty much the opposite of humility. So humility is not easy, because that energy to imitate Krishna is, you know, it slows down when you become a devotee, but it doesn't just stop all of a sudden. So, you know, we think, oh, I love Krishna and this and that. But there's something else going on, which is, you know, I want to be in the center, be the enjoyer. And what better way to be in the center and enjoy is to become famous. Because once you become rich, it's like, oh, that's cool, but I have to start putting my names on streets and buildings and so forth. Because, you know, money's like, you know, after you get a certain amount, it's like, you know, what can you buy, you know? You got the iPhone 8, so you can get the iPhone 10 in November, you know? But then what do? You know, you've got all your gizmos and gadgets, you've got your house, or you got your 25 houses. But fame, that's like, that's way up there on sense, the list of items that give you sense gratification. That's, fame is intoxicating. And so it motivates people. And that's, and you think, this guy has billions of dollars, he's like 78 and he's working so hard. He could be retired and live in one of his 25 homes and have 100 servants and have a great life. No, he's working. Why? Fame. He wants his name and fame to live on. Isn't it? So, there's another verse. even gets more subtle. The next verse says, and then he comes to the point where actually he renounces the desire for fame. He doesn't want it. He's not talking about devotees here. He's talking about sadhu. And there's a difference. General spiritualist. So he's not even proud of his renunciation anymore. He just doesn't want it. But when he gets it, he enjoys it. Like, you know, Nandini might invite me over to her house and say, you want some chocolate cake? I go, no, I don't eat cake. I don't eat sugar. I don't eat weed. I don't eat chocolate. But then it's like on the table. So, all right, I'll nibble at it, you know. So it's something like that, you know. I don't want fame in it, yeah, but someone gives it to you. Maharaj, you're so great. You're so wonderful. Smells pretty good. I have a little more, isn't it? So it's like that. So what is being said here in the purport, I read Dainanda Maharaj, he's saying that if you want to be successful in giving Krishna consciousness, you have to be solely, well, he didn't say it this way, but this is the intention. Do you have to be solely in the mood that I am only here to help you and I want nothing from you? I'm not preaching to you, I'm not serving you, I'm not doing anything to get anything from you. I'm simply doing it for you. There was a man who was quite famous as an author and a speaker, and he's an American psychologist, and he has a guru from India, so his teaching was very much oriented towards Eastern philosophy. And he said he chanted a mantra for 45 minutes before he would speak. And he chanted it in English. And it's so interesting. His mantra was, how can I serve? How can I serve? How can I serve? How can I serve? He would chant that. So when he would go on stage, he would just be there for the people, not about him. Now, I did a training, 5 days in how to facilitate workshops. And there were many great lessons in those 5 days. And one great lesson was, it's not about you, it's about them. Because you're on the stage, and you're like, okay, I have to, like, everyone has to like me, and I have to be funny, and so forth, and energetic. Which, you know, all this stuff, in a sense, is true, because it helps the education. So you do it, not to bring attention to you, but you do it because it'll help people. If I tell a joke, it keeps you awake. It keeps, you know, we're going 12 hours, I have to keep you entertained a bit, and I have to act a little bit to keep your attention going. But I'm not doing it so you think I'm great and everyone and you'll all praise me. I'm doing it because it'll help you. That's the mentality. So it's all about them. It's not about you. And so another thing that Prabhupada said, and we all know this, either consciously or subconsciously. One time, Prabhupada was teaching the devotees how to distribute books, and he said, if your intention is to help a person, they'll feel it, and they'll take a book. You know he said that? Do you know that? He said, if your intention is to help, they'll feel that, and then they'll take the book. The opposite he didn't say, but the connotation is there. If your intention is to be number one book distributor in America, and that's the reason you're on the street, no other reason, just that's the reason. Or some mixture of motives. Maybe you're a passionate guy. If you stayed back at the temple, you'd tear the walls down, so you have to go out on the street and chuck and jive with people, otherwise you would destroy yourself. People will feel something's not right here. But if they feel your intention is solely to help them, they will take the book. And the connotation of this is they will feel you. They will feel what's going on inside when you're with them. They will feel that. And so if you're trying to help people and people feel you, that your intention is to help them, they respond. It's not conscious. It's just, they may not even be aware of it, but they can feel something. I trust this person because he has my interest. Now, it's interesting. What is the beginning of Krishna consciousness? Ado Shraddha, trust. So, if our intention is pure, it's going to build trust, because they'll feel, this person does not want to get anything from me. Builds trust. Right? He just wants to help me. How many people in the world just want to help me? Even my mother doesn't always want to help me. This person, I feel he wants to help me. Trust builds, isn't it? This one professional speaker said something which I thought was so insightful and so beneficial for us. He said, when you speak, people are thinking, yeah, he says that, but does he actually do it himself? You know, he's saying, oh, you should all be humble. Yeah, is he humble? You should all be nice to your wives. Yeah, is he nice to his wife? You should all live simple. Yeah, does he live simple? Yeah. So, when you're living what you're teaching, what happens? Builds faith. So, if you are the real thing, then that's how you bring people to Krishna, because it builds faith. This process must work because this guy is the personification of what he's teaching. And that's what everybody said about Prabhupada. They said 24/7 he was the same. Inside, outside, up and down, he was the same person. Whatever he spoke, that's what he was. I mean, just try to understand, you have these hippies. Hippies doubt everything. They were anti-everything. And so Prabhupada comes in, and he's kind of like the emblem of everything they don't stand for. And in the movie, you remember, Mukundaraj was saying he was the real thing. And he said, as we as hippies had this eye to see everyone and say, are you the real thing? Are you doing what you say? Are you a hypocrite? And he said, Prabhupada wasn't, and that's why we became devotees. He said, here's a person who is not a hypocrite. So, again, it goes back to this point that, you know, you can't just do something externally. Okay, I know the philosophy. I can speak it. I know how to distribute books. I know how to do so many things. Good. Do it. But if you want to actually be effective in the long run, you have to be what you're telling other people to be. One person said, you want some good advice? I'll give you some good advice. Follow all the good advice you give to other people. That's good advice, right? Do everything you tell other people to do. That's good. So that's what it means to be a preacher. To do everything you're telling other people to do. There was this one author and speaker. He has a philosophy. Maybe we don't exactly follow it, or we can't. But in general, I think it's a good principle to try to accommodate. He said, I don't teach it if I don't live it. You know, I didn't know what the verse is about, so I didn't have that choice. But if you're going to, you know, go out in the world as a speaker, and you're going to talk about, you know, okay, I'm going to do my speaking on relationships, you better have good relationships, otherwise. You better master the science, otherwise how can you teach it if you don't have it? So, as far as this point here that Maharaj is making, about being free from prestige, the nature of a Vaishnava, or the nature of what a Vaishnava is supposed to come to, when a Vaishnava becomes Uttama Adhikari, he sees that everyone is engaged in devotional service. Everyone. 7 billion people he sees as devotees. Amazing. Except one person's not a devotee. He sees 7 million people as a devotee, except one, himself. And we see 7 billion people, they're just karmis, and even the devotees, but me, you know, I got it together somewhat, you know, I mean, I figured it out, you know. So humility is it's such an amazing thing, because the essential aspect of humility, when it achieves its full blossoming state, is you see everybody better than you, which is inconceivable. Everyone is better than me. I'm the bottom of the pile. Can you imagine? Right? And now our consciousness is, yeah, there's a few people better than me, you know, but I'm pretty up there, you know. I mean, like, I went to university, I did good, you know. I made a lot of money, you know. I'm a smart guy, smart girl. Yeah, there's other people smarter than me, more successful, but, you know, I'm up there. You know, that's not humility. So, at least we should understand what the goal is. That's the goal. Someday we will actually see everybody better than us. Now, in our movement, you know, word organization and organizations mean there's people, and people means there's trouble. Right? Just bring enough people together and there's friction. Could you imagine everybody who's thinking, Prabhu, you're better than me? That would pretty much eliminate all the friction. So that's like, you want a workshop on cooperation? How to cooperate? Just become humble. Just think everyone's better than you. All problems solved. Okay, easier said than done. But I want to tell you something Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said. He said, even we may not be humble, because you can't just go home and turn on your humble machine and put your head in it. You can't do that. You have to chant year after year after year. But he said, if you're consciously looking to get recognition within the society of devotees, you're like trying to manipulate yourself to get recognition, he said, that is evil. That is evil. That consciousness is wicked. Those are the two words he used. Use the word wicked. Bhaktisiddhanta. Wicked and evil. That mentality. That, you know, like, because sometimes it may happen, there's a service available, and the devotee will think, let me do that because it's a big service and I'll be recognized. And that becomes his motive. Not, let me do this service because it will please Guru and Krishna. But if I get this position, hey, when I go to Mayapur, you know, they'll announce so-and-so is here, the TP of this or the manager of that, and I'll feel good. If that's your motive, that's wicked. That's what he said. It's wicked. So then once we, many times I've done a workshop on humility, and one of the questions we ask the devotees is, can you think of a time when your motive in serving Krishna was mixed with the desire for name and fame? Like, you know, okay, I want to do this service. There's some purity there. But there was also some thought that I'll get some recognition. You know, like maybe I'm cooking, and when, you know, devotees eat this, they're all going to go wild, and they're going to be a big line, you know, lining up to tell me how good it was. You know, so that may be there. 1%, 10%, 88%, 94.3%, whatever. You know, think of a time, you know, when it wasn't pure. One devotee raises her hand and says, I can't think of any time it was pure. I can't think of a time when I didn't have that motivation. So I'm not saying we're all like that, but that's the condition we come from. That's, you know, our motivation in the material world is imitate Krishna. And imitate Krishna means all glories to me. Send me that, you know, the message that you like me. And I'm cool. And I'm better. And I'm... That's the conditioning. So that's what we're up against. Yes.
Really wonderful points, but I was also thinking that oftentimes in our temples throughout the world, there's no acknowledgement for any service anyone's doing, no encouragement,
keep you humble,
right? To keep you humble, maybe, or sometimes it's just nice to see someone doing some service and say, "Wow."
I can tell you.
I watched the man doing all this service this morning, this devotee, fixing everything. And I said, wow.
Well, I have a nice statement from Bhaktisiddhanta that you're going to love this.
Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, he said, the reason I cannot appreciate the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas is because I have not even 1 ounce of humility. So that was his point. Why don't we appreciate? He said, it's a lack of humility. So in response to your question, if we just increase the humility, the appreciation part goes up also. And one of the things that's interesting about appreciation, and this question always comes up because we all by nature want to be appreciated. That's human nature. It's one of the six human needs. How do they describe it? Security. First human need is security. The next one is variety.
What about love?
That's kind of underlying it all. I forget how they say it, but to know. One of the human needs is to know that I'm valuable. So it's not actually pride. So if I appreciate you, you do some service and I appreciate you, there's two ways to take it. One way is, yeah, because I'm so good, you know, of course you appreciate me. And the other one is, I'm happy to know that my service was pleasing to you. So it's an acknowledgement that I'm of value, I'm worthy. Because depression and suicide comes at the point when you think,
you're
I'm
just
worthless.
No one.
Low self-esteem precedes depression, and depression precedes suicide. So Prabhupada would say, thank you for your service, etc., etc. So then you realize, okay, I guess it's worth waking up tomorrow. I did something that my spiritual master appreciated. You know, I picked a crumb off the floor. Now there's not a crumb on the floor. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for seeing that crumb. So I think that's the point you're making, that appreciation has that power to encourage.
I think in the last... the last Guru Puja Gurudev had here in Dallas, perhaps you were here, I can't remember, but he, in his presentation, he glorified lists and lists of God brothers.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And some of them perhaps are not in such good standing, but
yes,
he could still acknowledge and glorify the service that they do.
Well, what I think one of the big things we can take from this is to see how much our heart naturally is inclined to appreciate, because it's a sign of our spiritual advancement, it's a sign of our humility. And if the heart is naturally inclined to condemn and criticize, it's not the problem with the person. We want to rationalize, no, it's the problem. I mean, look at, I don't have to find fault. Just look at the guy. His faults are everywhere. I'm not even searching for them. You know, what do you expect? You know? Of course I'm going to point them out. No. The reality is that when you're in that consciousness to be able to appreciate people, you either don't see the faults or the faults don't bother you. They don't capture you. Maybe you see them, but it doesn't capture your consciousness because you're in the mood of appreciation. That's a sign you're advancing. And if you're criticizing, it's a sign either you haven't advanced or you were advanced one day and you're going down. And see, what I've realized is oftentimes criticism is used to kind of rationalize or to be able to deal with your own failure. Because if I've failed, I feel bad. Or if I think I'm low, I feel bad. So if I could criticize you, I don't feel so bad because you're also low. And so if you're low and I'm low, I could be better than you. There's an example. You build a skyscraper, and you have the biggest skyscraper in Dallas, right? This is like 100 years ago. You got the skyscraper. Right? Now, all of a sudden, the city expands, and these other skyscrapers built around your skyscraper, and they're taller. So you would think, okay, what do you want to do? You want to be the number one, build your skyscraper up. Well, there's another way to do it. Just blow up the other buildings. Now you're the tallest. So that's what criticism is, you know? I feel insecure in myself, because I'd like to be better than I am, and I don't have enough sense control to be better, or I'm just karmically not going to be better. And you're better, so let me blow you up. That's called criticism. And if I can blow you up, then I'll feel better about myself. Now, Will everyone admit that's why they do it? Of course not. But is that why we do it? Generally, yes. Right? Now, so what happens? This is what I've seen personally and in other people. We don't live in a varnashram society, so if you're not like on the top of the top of the top, you don't feel good about yourself. You're like, I'm a loser. Why are you a loser? Because I don't drive a Jaguar or Rolls Royce. I just drive a Mercedes, and my neighbor has a Jaguar. That makes me a loser. Okay. I only have 400 pairs of shoes. He has 800. I'm a loser. Oh, okay. So, you know, because it's all homogenous, it's like, you know, the more money, the bigger position, and the more labels, and the more beautiful your spouse, and if you don't have, you know, you don't even have a vacation home, loser, you know. You get up in higher echelons, if you're not making like $3 million a month, you're a loser in that category. You're just, you know, you're a loser. You're not a billionaire. You only made $35 million? Loser. Isn't it? I went to a workshop and the guy said, if you cannot clear profit, $250,000 a year, you don't know how to run a business. You don't. And it's true. You're not a Vaishya. If you're not a Vaishya, you either can't figure it out, you'll read the books, it'll go in one ear out the other, or you got it all figured out, but you just go to the temple and chant. You don't want to go do it because you're not a Vaishya. Which is fine, you know? It's like, oh, I feel so bad, I can't make money, my life is useless. No, you're not, life's useless. You're an artist, you're not a salesperson, you know? You know, we used to say the word Sankirtan. There was these days we would go out with stickers or flowers or just collecting. They would say, time for Sankirtan, I'd fall asleep. So I'd start yawning as soon as they say Sankirtan, because I didn't want to go out and sell a sticker or a flower. It's not my nature. Other people are like, yeah. The Vaishyas are like, yeah, just give me, I'll sell anything. Throw it in the van, you know. Isn't it? Yes.
So with that comment you made about the seminar, uh-huh. And he said, you know, if you're not making $250,000, you're a loser, you're not a Vaishya, is contradictory to our philosophy, isn't it? Because some people do nothing and become very wealthy, and some people endeavor and endeavor and endeavor. It doesn't happen, isn't it?
Yeah, but generally, he didn't say that. I said that. That was my interpretation.
Right.
But generally, I mean, karmic factor, yeah. But generally, this is what I've seen, those who don't have the Vaishya nature, they don't have the determination and the focus and the natural desire to do it. I went to London in the summer, and I have a disciple there, and he was working at a mobile phone company, and he would work half time, and he would sell double what the full time people would sell, and he doesn't even know how he does it. He just does it, right? So he said, I have CDs in my workshops. He says, okay, we're printing more CDs. We're gonna, you know. We're gonna really do well. And he was been trained in sales, right? So normally I go somewhere, we'll sell 300, 400, 500, you know, and maybe up to 800 if I spend a week. So he was in charge, and in 1 week I sold 2,300 pounds of CDs. You know, and if I had someone else doing that, it would have been about 400. People walk by and goes, I recommend these three. You know, and why buy one? Because if you buy three, you get a deal. It's almost like half price. You know, that's what he was doing.
People with you all the time, Mahama.
So I think we have to take... My point is, notwithstanding karmic situations, but my point is, if you evaluate success in terms of money, the people who have the Shakti to make money, they're successful. And if you don't, you just think, okay, I'm a loser. There's a friend of ours, and there was some court case against her, and she lost like $600,000 or something. You know? So we were with her in Mayapur, and, you know, she was in anxiety about it. This was before she lost it. And she goes, She goes, anyway, if I lose it, I'll just make it all back. It was like, for her, it was like, yeah, it just happened. And she made it all back and more. You know, it's like, whatever, no problem. You know, it's like, if I don't finish my rounds today, I'll finish tomorrow. I've been doing it for 50 years. I'm not going to, but for someone else, if I don't finish my rounds today, that's it. It goes on my debt. You know, I got 14,000 rounds in debt. So, you know what I'm saying? It's like, some people are like that. In their sleep, they can do it. And other people, I have a friend, many of you may know, Havi Prabhu. So Havi Prabhu is, we were together when we were like brahmacharis in 72, and we'd go out to colleges and do kirtan, and then he would do kirtan, and I'd be like, oh my God, I never heard anybody sing and play like that. He was playing Prabhupada. Every minute nuance of how Prabhupada chanted, he was doing it. I didn't even realize that Prabhupada chanted that way. So he told me that, you know, at one point he realized he could actually become famous. He had the ability to do it, right? And that's what he did. And now he's being, in November, I think, he is being put or honored into the Grammy Hall of Fame for Latin America, I guess. Amazing, right? So I used to go to South Florida a lot. He lives there. I'd spend time, old friends. And he'd always be playing, he'd listen to this. He'd be playing something on the piano, listen to this song. Or playing songs in English that were devotional songs. Like, amazing, amazing stuff, you know? And I'd sit there and I'd think, yeah, you have to have this karma to become this famous. You can't, if you don't have it, you know. And he can, I go, Javi, who taught you to play piano? He goes, nobody. You know, he can just hear things I don't hear. Don't you hear that? And I go, what? No, this chord is like that. You know? So immediately I can understand, yeah, you could become famous, you know. I'm just a Me Too imitation, you know. I'm not in that league. So what Varnashram does is like, okay, you're not Javi. You just, you know, you like to play your tablas and your shanai. So you create a band and you go to weddings and you play and you make money and you live in your village and, you know, everything's cool. You know, it's like you're happy. You got your chapatis and you got your kids and, you know, it's not that mood, you know. But our society is like, okay, you know, where do you live? What car? What's the label on your clothes? Or what's your job? And how many zeros you have after that one in your bank balance? Then we'll see how successful you are. So naturally, so people feel bad. I'm not successful. And so, if you go up to someone and say, you, I really appreciate this about you, or that about you, or, you know, you always were always submissive, or you were always, it's like, people need that, because our society is programming us to think, you know, hey, you know, you listen to my class, at the end of my class, you're totally depressed. And you go, why are you so depressed? It's because I could never give class. Every time I tried to give class, it doesn't come out. And now you give class, it just comes out like you could do it in your sleep. I'm totally depressed. Isn't that? That's No. You manage. You're like, I couldn't manage like you. You're amazing. You 160 things every second, you know, and everything's completely organized. Go into my room. It's a disaster. I can't organize anything. We're different. You know, so, you know, if I go up to you and say, no, you know, you're so organized. It's amazing how organized you are. Then you get encouraged. You feel, okay, I guess I shouldn't kill myself. I could live another day, you know. It's like that. I mean, I've studied this. I deal with it with people all the time. And that's what our society has done. It's taken people who are fine. They're just fine the way they are. And they're being programmed to think there's something wrong because they're not like him. Mm-hmm. It's totally destructive. Yeah. Your point is so well taken. If we just acknowledge somebody, well, you know, I really thank you for doing that. It was really wonderful. Wow. It makes a huge difference. Yeah. One last thing. We did a workshop. It wasn't my workshop. It was another devotee's workshop. And I had such an interesting experience. Part of the workshop is you were meant to tell what you appreciate about others. And so you would go up in front, and there was like 20 people there, and they would say what they appreciate about you. We also did another exercise where you'd go in front of 20 people and they'd tell you what they didn't like about you, mm-hmm. which was really heavy. But I recommend if you could ever be in that situation, do it, because once having done that, anybody can tell you anything. You're just used to being told what's wrong with you. So I go. But about 80 to 90% of the people told me one thing about myself that I didn't think was me. I never thought I was like that. And after that, I was like, oh my God. Actually, I thought I was the opposite of what they said. I thought I wasn't so much like this. And they said, no, you are like this. Like most people said, you are like this. And I thought, no, I always thought I was like this. I'm not very much like this. I'm like this. And it was just so interesting to see that other people saw this. And I didn't see it. And one of the definitions of low self-esteem is that you don't see things as they are. You don't see yourself as you are. You see yourself less than you are. Which we think, oh, well, that's good for Krishna consciousness. Yeah, if it comes from Krishna consciousness, it's good. But if it comes from a weak psychology, it's bad. You're here, and you think you're actually here. That's how you see yourself. So you act down here because that's how you see yourself. You will always act lower if you think you're lower. And if you think you're here, you'll act here. If you think you're here, you're here. That's why sometimes we see arrogant people. They're acting up here, although they're like nimbeciles. But they achieve more than the intelligent guys who think they're down here. Isn't it? So I think encouraging people will help. There was this one devotee. She said, I have to talk to you. I said, okay. So we're talking outside and devotees are walking past us. And she said, my whole life, my parents put me down. They just said, I'm stupid, useless, and so on. And said, that's how I feel. I said, so as the devotees would walk down, I'd say, tell me what you like about so-and-so, about her. So they'd stop and they'd say, oh, she's so this and so that. I go, okay. The next devotee, what do you like about her? You know, so for 15 minutes, she heard people complimenting her. She never heard that in her life. So I see her the next day. She said, I'm fine. That's all she needed, because she never heard it before. Isn't that amazing? She just needed to hear that she was okay. So, you know, there's power in just telling someone you're okay, because a lot of people don't think they're okay. And I think Prabhupada did that really well. Prabhupada never made you feel like you were stupid. He never made you feel like you're an idiot, jerk, useless, bum. Don't get out of bed. He never made you feel that. What he made you feel is like it didn't matter who you were. There's Krishna. Go for it. You can get him. That's how he made you feel. So people say, how did you guys do all these amazing things? Because we Prabhupada just said, do it. We said, okay. That was it. It wasn't like, can I do that or not? That never even came to mind. That wasn't even a consideration. That wasn't even on the list. Okay, Prabhu, you're going to start a temple with these four devotees, and, you know, here's $3, and, you know, somehow we get there. I go, okay, we're going to do it. You know, it wasn't like, how do you do it with $3? It was like, okay. So I think that was Prabhupada's, I don't want to say genius, but that's just who he was. You know, you're sincere, that's it. That's all you need is sincerity. I don't care where you came from. I don't care what you were doing. I don't care what your mother said when you were growing up. If you're sincere, you take this process, you'll be successful. That was Prabhupada's mood. And you can go out and spread Krishna consciousness. And you can go out and make other people. Not only that, you could become a guru. Oh my God, I want you all to become gurus. 1968, I may not live long, all become gurus. Become a guru? What are you talking about? Yes. But I'm not qualified. Doesn't matter. Are you sincere? That's your qualification. Amazing. Right? So, that was the wind behind us. Okay, we'll do it. Yeah. I mean, who am I to tell people what to do?
But Prabhupada told me to tell people what Krishna said. So, okay, I'll do it. Hare Krishna. You had something? Or you just have the mic?
I have a question.
Okay.
So how much are we supposed to, you know, try for those qualities, like humility?
Uh-huh.
There's a long list of qualities, you know, tolerance, humility.
Yes.
And how much should we just try to be Krishna conscious and through the process of, you know, heart cleansing, our natural qualities come out?
They're not mutually exclusive, because you should try to be humble, but without Krishna consciousness, how will you become humble? So, Jiva Goswami posed the question, is humility a path to bhakti? Is humility an ingredient of bhakti? Or is humility a byproduct of bhakti? So it's kind of like three tenses. Is it future tense? Is it present? Past? Do you get humility when you have bhakti? Can you not have bhakti unless humility is mixed in? And can you get bhakti if you're not humble, if you don't practice it? And the answer was, as you might guess, yes, yes, yes. All three. You need all three. But inherent in your question was, well, can I just do it with bhakti? Bhakti is the foundation. But let's give another example. There are four regular principles, right? So Prabhupada said, you have to promise to follow these. Okay, but the Shastra says, Prahlad Maharaj says, sarva gunas tatra samasate sura. If you become a bhakta, you'll have all the good qualities of demigods. So why didn't Prabhupada just say, chant 16 rounds, don't worry about the other four regs, because if you chant 16 rounds, you don't have to follow the four regs. You'll just follow them. Right? Why? Because if you don't follow them, your rounds will be destroyed. So we have to make sure you got to follow this so this can work. And when this works, you don't have to worry about following this, you will. So you're a puffed up fool, rascal number one. You better deflate if you want to chant the holy name, Trinadapi Sunichana. If you don't, okay, so how do you deflate? Okay, I'm critical of everyone. I think I'm the biggest, best at everything. And I don't want to appreciate anyone. And I don't want to serve anyone. So how? What do I do now? Appreciate everyone. Serve everyone. Well, I don't feel it. I don't believe it. It doesn't matter. You have to practice it. Because your name that you chant, it's got to have power. And the power, then you'll become humble. You'll really become humble. But you have to practice it. You know the story. Gargamuni says, Prabhupada, I don't feel like bowing down, you know. You know, New York Jew, wealthy family. Of course, you don't feel like bowing down. Dhananar Swami said, his brother said, I don't bow down to nobody. You know, okay, you know, a bona fide New York Jew. You know, I come from that background. I totally understand it. Right? So Prabhupada said, you should bow down, even if you don't feel like it, because if you bow down, you'll feel like it. So that's the idea. So, I'm not humble, I'll just chant Hare Krishna and be proud? No, it doesn't work. So you have to act humbly, glorify the other devotees, appreciate, don't criticize. Something's going to change in your heart. I'll give you an example. At the end of our forgiveness workshop, we do an exercise. So your partner is playing this person that is driving you crazy and you have so much resentment towards and revenge, and you would just like to see them, you know, humiliated or maybe end up in jail. And then we do an exercise where you have to appreciate them. It's like, what a switch, right? This person that, you know, my Uncle Harry, you know, who did this to me when I was 7 and my whole life is destroyed. Now I have to appreciate Uncle Harry? Are you kidding? I go, yeah, you have to. Figure it out. You're going to do it. So what happens is, after they do it, there's a switch in their heart. Even though it was contrived, artificial, I pushed them. Their hearts, it actually purifies the heart. And I didn't understand appreciation as a sadhana until we did this. And I say, it's a sadhana. You have to do it as a part of sadhana. So your practice of your humility is your sadhana, which will empower your bhakti, and your bhakti will free you from that anartha.
Then we did this other exercise, most amazing exercise. Get all the devotees in the temple. We talk about appreciation for 5-10 minutes, and I say, now I want you to go around and just appreciate one another. And we teach that appreciation is not like you look for, hey, nice socks, Prabhu, Hare Krishna, and go to the next one. You know, hey, nice hairstyle. No, it's appreciation on a different level. It's an emotion. What do I feel when I'm in front of you? Do I feel something? And then I express that. One of the most transformational experiences those people have ever had in their life. It's amazing. Every time I do it, I did it at a devotee's company. People were crying and hugging because they had so much going on between them, and the appreciation dissolved it. So it's such a powerful emotion. So I don't feel like appreciating anybody. Should I? Yeah, because it'll change my heart. I just feel like criticizing. And, you know, I don't want to be artificial, and, you know, you got to be real, Prabhu, so I'm just going to go criticize people because that's real for me. You know, that's total American BS. Right? Culture means there's a behavior that you follow. Even if you don't feel it, you do it. In India, you respect position. Even, you know, this is your father, and even though, you know, he's like, you know, had another girlfriend, and, you know, sometimes he gets drunk, but he's your father, you respect him. That's culture. You don't follow him, you don't agree with what he says, but you respect him. American culture, that doesn't happen. You know, you're my father, yeah, you're a drunkard. Get out of here, I don't want to see your face. Isn't it? So we have, you know, so following the culture is, okay, I don't feel it, but I'm going to do it because it's the right thing to do. But so this experience with appreciation and how it changed the heart, it was like, okay, that's the answer to your question. If you do it, it'll purify you. And don't think it as separate from bhakti, but it's part of the process of bhakti, right? To control yourself, control your anger, appreciate devotees, control your tendency to criticize, whatever it is, that's part of your sadhana. It's incredible how purifying it is, because it's the opposite of criticism, and we know how bad criticism is. Appreciation is like amazing, and it helps the devotees you appreciate. It helps everybody. And criticism hurts everyone. Hurts the person, it hurts you, and hurts the person you criticize. So it's super powerful. That's just amazing. I can't appreciate appreciation anymore. It's too much. Now the other thing is, there was one philosopher who said, I forget who it was, he said, what you appreciate in others appreciates in you. So you glorify in this quality, and that quality starts to infect you. And a good infection. You criticize, that quality starts to infect you. So it's a very interesting karmic reality. That what you criticize tends to infect you, and what you appreciate tends to infect you. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, if you criticize someone, you give them your karma, and you get their sin. So if you're feeling magnanimous, go, you know, coming, you can all criticize me, because, you know, I'll get all your good karma, and you'll get all my sin. Hey, it's a good deal. So, you know, it's pretty detrimental. Yes? Radha Vino Das Kijai.
What would be a, is there a balance between feeling oneself fallen and seeing one's good qualities?
So what's
a balance? Healthy balance. So I'm always falling. Yeah. I'm loser, whatever.
I'm going to say something. Maybe other devotees wouldn't say, but I'm convinced of it. That I think for many, many devotees, the problem that they're having is they're not recognizing their good qualities in the name of humility, because they don't want to become proud. Can you recognize your good qualities and not become proud of them? Yes, you can. Because at least if you don't recognize something about yourself, how would you do anything? It's like, what should I do? Well, you know, you want to give class? No, I don't think I can. Yeah, I'll give class. Yeah, I know I can give class. Should I say no? But I give the class, and someone says, that's a nice class. And I think, it's just Prabhupada's mercy. I don't know. I don't even know what I said. I have to listen to the recording to remember. So if I take it that way, then I'm okay. You see, part of the problem is Prabhupada said you have to gauge your bhakti to know if you're advancing. So, okay, now I ask you, Radha Vinod, if you want to gauge your bhakti, are you more humble now than you were 25 years ago? And you're probably going to say, yeah, I can see. There's certain, when I was a new devotee, I was so puffed up, this and that. I can see now, life has humbled me, my guru humbled me, the Vaishnavas humbled me, chanting has humbled me. I can honestly say yes. You know, you're proud. You think you're humble. No. So, catch 22. But Prabhupada's saying, you have to know if you're advancing, so I have to be able to know. Am I actually, is my ego decreased a little bit? I have to be able to say yes and be humble in saying yes. That I'm humble, more humble. Otherwise, how do you gauge your bhakti? So, and there's another thing that I think is very important to understand, is that what is humility for us is not humility for Krishnadas Kaviraj. If you go walking around and thinking, okay, I'm gauging my humility, how close am I to thinking I'm a worm in stool? You know, put the meter up to my heart. You know, I'm not very close to thinking I'm a worm in stool. So, that's not our gauge, worm and stool. That comes at the level of prema. You will think you're a worm and stool at the level of prema. If you think you're a worm and stool as a Kanishtra Madhyam Adhikari, get you in an ambulance and take you to a mental hospital. You're crazy. That's all. There's no other explanation. You can't think that way and be sane as a Madhyam or a Kanishtra. Because that's a byproduct of prema. But how can I manifest humility? Put my head down, think, tell everybody, Prabhu, I'm lower than a worm and stool. Can I kiss your feet? No. What's the point? But can I serve you? Can I do something for you? Can I glorify you? That's how we, can we cooperate together? How about that as a standard for humility? Put the gauge up to that, you know. Have you seen this scenario? Oh, Dharashaya, I'm lower than a worm and stool, this and that. And then Dharashaya asked me to do something. Well, who are you, why are you asking me to do? Why don't you do it? Have we seen that scenario? So, you know, it's like, so what's humility for us? You know, how about cooperation as a standard? So I think that's important to monitor that. Otherwise we think, you know, we monitor it in the wrong way. Yeah, I'm humble and I don't get along with anybody. Yes.
I remember the poem that you wrote. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
When you...
I was shocked.
Huh?
You it's were called shocked. I was shocked.
I was shocked, exactly. About all the, you know, the temple president that was so abusive and on, yes, and on and on. And you went back in the kingdom of God and they were, wow, they were all there.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you'd comment a little bit about that.
I think it's the same point. Where we're looking at how much we're appreciating, how much we're criticizing, not in terms of the fault of the other, but in terms of my own impurity. Like, if I'm judging, and I'm not in a position of management, I don't have to judge, there's something wrong with me. And it goes back, like, why do I need to judge? Because I think I'm the standard. So if I'm judging you, I'm judging against my standard. The thing also, as you probably well know, we have blind spots. So I may be doing the very thing I'm judging you. And why it's bothering me is because I do it and I don't like it when I see it in other people. And I may not even see it in myself. So if we see criticism, lack of appreciation, judgment, and so forth as a lack of Krishna consciousness, then it just becomes an awareness for us. Like Prabhupada said, if you're advancing, you'll become detached from sex. So everyone knows if my sexual, either gross or subtle, desires are increasing, something's wrong. I have to do something. Just like, you know, you've been tired all week. What's going on? You go, maybe I'm not sleeping enough, I'm eating the wrong food, etc. So that's how we're supposed to take it. But we're so stupid, we just think it's the other person's fault. I'm not judging you, you're just an idiot. Then, you know, what can I say? That's the illusion. Like in our forgiveness workshop, we have this little analogy. So when you squeeze an orange, what do you get out of the orange? And everyone's with orange juice. Why? Because that's what's inside. Okay, and when you're squeezed, what comes out of you? Yeah, exactly. What's inside? So, you know, I'm saying all these bad things about you because it's inside me and you're just a catalyst, but I don't see that. You know, or you make me angry, or I can't be Krishna conscious, you know, around you. Prabhupada wrote a letter to a devotee. The devotee said, I can't be Krishna conscious married. I want to take sannyas. And Prabhupada said, this is the understanding of a neophyte who thinks that Krishna consciousness is external circumstances. And then Prabhupada said something heavy, heavy, heavy. He said, to think if there's a problem with another devotee, you should think, not their fault, it's my fault. Because he's thinking it's his wife's fault that he's not Krishna conscious. And he's saying, you should think it's your fault. It's your lack of Krishna consciousness. And after that sentence, Prabhupada said, is this clear? Like, we'll put that in modern surfer California talk. Dude, did you get it? Is this clear? If you don't get this, you don't get anything in my letter. Is this clear? It's not because you're married. It's because you are you. That's why you have the problem. Hello, work on yourself. Don't run out of the situation thinking it's better, because the problem is you, not the situation. Is it clear? You hear what I'm saying? Did you get it? That's it. So we need to see that when we're doing all this stuff and criticizing and judging. We need to see, hey, it's not about him, it's about me. And, you know, if I walk into the temple and I think, amazing, beautiful, everything's going on, the devotees are so wonderful, then I think, hey, I must be doing okay because I'm seeing the positive side. And if I walk in thinking, eh, I've been here in 6 years, it's all the same here, this is rotting, this hasn't been painted, you know, nobody's at Mangal Arati, I'm getting out of here, you know, then it's saying about me. This one writer said, when you criticize, all it's saying is about your need to criticize, not about what you're criticizing. It's about your need to criticize. That's what you should understand. Right? Yes, you all know this. So, we can stop here. Otherwise, if we go any longer, then we're going into level one of the humility workshop, and then that needs 20 more hours to deflate the false ego sufficiently. But it's at least an appetizer. Okay. Thank you for listening. Hope I didn't upset anybody. Or maybe I should try. Maybe it's good I did upset you. Get you moving and grooving. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go Premanandi. Hari Hari Bol.